University Forum is a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University, which brings speakers and performers to the campus throughout the semester to lecture on a variety of topics. The opinions expressed by the speakers do not necessarily represent the opinions of Nebraska Wesleyan University or of this station. Today, University Forum presents Lincoln columnist and carpenter Kurt Donaldson speaking on Raising False Hopes in a Responsible Manner, The Challenge of Politics in Nebraska. A Democratic candidate for Congress in 1982 from the 1st District, Donaldson ran against incumbent Doug Bierider. He currently writes a weekly column for the Lincoln Star and serves on the Lincoln Electric System Board.
We'd planned to have one or more political candidates speak here today, but the Forum Committee was so tired of hearing all their radio and television ads that they decided a humorous view of the campaign might be a little more appealing. Our speaker this morning is Kurt Donaldson, who has a fascinating background and a great deal of experience in the area of political humor. In 1982, he ran one of the most refreshing campaigns for the U.S. Congress that Lincoln has ever seen. He was running as the Democratic nominee against the incumbent, Doug Bierider, who had already served two terms in the House at that time. Kurt financed his campaign largely through the sale of homemade bread. Although he was soundly defeated, he was able to write a book from his experiences entitled Stumping the District. And did you bring copies with you for...
We're behind.
All right. Sold out. Sorry. And he didn't bring any of his homemade bread with him either, so we're out of luck today. Another outgrowth of that campaign was the emergence of a special expertise in the construction of yard signs. Kurt, who now bills himself as a yard sign consultant in addition to his many other talents, estimates he has been involved in the construction of approximately 20,000 yard signs over the past 5 years. Here they are. For those of you who are wondering what you can do with a major in political science, Kurt did earn a bachelor's degree in poli-sci with emphasis in international relations from UNL. He then spent several years in Washington, D.C. working for public interest organizations such as Common Cause and Zero Population Growth, groups he describes as good causes with no money. He returned to Lincoln in 1973 and is currently self-employed as a carpenter. He serves on the Lincoln Electric System Board and for the past 3 years has written a weekly column which appears on Fridays in the Lincoln Star. In his column, he frequently refers to his research arm, the Center for Applied Speculation. He is also an occasional columnist for USA Today. In keeping with his attitude of positive skepticism about the political process, Kurt's talk is entitled Raising False Hopes in a Responsible Manner, The Challenge of Politics in Nebraska. Please help me welcome Kurt Donaldson.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here. I understand some of you are getting credit for this. I thought those days were long gone, and I'm glad to see it. You know, everybody needs a little slack once in a while. And I am happy to be here today because if I was not here, I would be someplace else. And someplace else I would be this morning is the Lincoln Administrative System Administrative Board meeting at which we vote on annual salary increases. They seem to be a custom. It's a custom that is a real Nebraska, and I find unpleasant, and so I'm happy to get out of that duty this morning. It's not funny. It's not funny at all. But you might like to know, since we've got a whole class period, how did I become a Nebraskan? It's sort of like if you come here from someplace else, people say, what brings you here, stranger, to these parts? Well, with me, it was a combination of ignorance, honesty, and stupidity. I was a freshman at the University of Wisconsin and had a very pleasant time. It's a very nice major land-grant university over that way. And my father moved out of the state, and so I went to the bursar's office and I asked them, my father's just moved out of the state. Does that mean I lose my in-state tuition? And they said, how do you spell your name? We can take care of it right now. So my father moved to Nebraska. It was just that simple. I tagged along and spent three pleasant years at the University of Nebraska in the fabled 60s, graduated in 1970, and went off to Washington, as she said, to solve problems for groups with no money. I was fundamentally unemployed. And So it got to the point where I said, well, the Washington Post want ads are huge. How can I boil this down a little bit in the want ads? What could I fake? And I said, well, why not become a carpenter? My grandfather was a carpenter. My great-grandfather was a carpenter. My father was pretty handy, so why not do that? And that's what I did. And then after I got to commuting 50 miles a day each way to be a carpenter, I said, you know, I could do this back in Nebraska, I betcha. And so we left Washington, D.C. and returned to Nebraska in 1973 and haven't had any regrets about it, because I firmly believe that Nebraska is one of the best places there is to ride out the century. This has not been a great century, I don't think. Been some problems with it, and I'm just trying to make 2,000. But the challenge I found after I'm back in Nebraska is how to stay awake till the end of the century. It's like some New Year's parties I've been to in Lincoln. You know, you kind of wake up at midnight. You know, wake us up at midnight, and we'll have sing "Auld Lang Syne," and then we'll go home. This is not life in the fast lane out here. But one of the ways that I have found to stay awake is that I did join up about 6 years ago with the Center for Applied Speculation, as she mentioned, which is America's foremost underground think tank, probably the only think tank that really thinks independently. It's the coyote of the think tank world. It lives off of scraps. We feed by day on discarded facts. We shelter by night in abandoned dreams. And we don't take money from anybody, hardly. We don't take money from the big corporations, government, or the universities, or even business. It's not to say that we wouldn't, but it hasn't been offered. But this way you can think independently. And because we've been able to think independently on a part-time basis, we've actually been able to solve problems. There's actually very little interest in the world in actually solving problems. There's more an interest in perpetuating them, in making careers out of problems. But by taking a part-time, let's solve this thing and get back to work approach, we have solved the problems of the arms race, solved the problems of the Middle East, solved the problems of the farmer. And that's not what I'm here to talk to you about today, because once you've solved these problems, they can become a little boring to talk about. You might like to hear about it, but I don't want to talk about it. We did it, you know. We've done it. One of the things we do at the Center for Applied Speculation is that we observe Nebraska politics as a part-time spectator sport, and it makes an ideal part-time hobby because it's not something you have to pay attention to all the time. It's sort of like watching moss grow on a dead log. Check it every few months, every few years even, and just to see how it's doing, turn it over, give it some water, and, you know, it's my kind of hobby. This year, we do have another governor's race, happens every 4 years, and the complaint you're hearing now is that there are no issues in this campaign. Well, I think, first of all, you've got to realize that you don't need issues to have a campaign. All you need is two candidates, and we've got that. One of my favorite political quotes is from a guy who was running for governor up in South Dakota a couple of years ago, and he said, "There are no issues in this campaign. My opponent has a job, and I want it." And he won. He got the job. And I think this campaign this year reflects the natural nature of Nebraska in the candidates. Nebraska is a state that I think you could say has never been big on taxes. And I think probably you are fortunate here not to be dependent upon taxes. You get your tuition money some other way. I think that's good, because over at UNL, it used to be they talked about becoming a mediocre university and the danger of becoming a mediocre university. And now it may become a positive goal to strive for. Something to strive to maintain, something to seek. Stay up there at that mid-level and you're doing all right. But I think you have to go back to the beginning of statehood in Nebraska. I don't know how many of you are aware that I think Nebraska is the only state or the only territory that ever voted down statehood. This happened in 1864. And what happened was, you know, that was the usual hoopla for statehood, but some people who with foresight, who could look ahead and see what statehood would bring, would said, you know, look, If we become a state, we're going to have to tax ourselves and pay for our own government. Whereas if we stay a territory, the federal government will pay the cost of government. And this argument won, and statehood failed. Then in 1866 or 67 or so, there was a hoopla again, and the short-sighted types actually succeeded in passing statehood, and we've been living with that blunder ever since. And trying to make the best of it. Now, kind of into things here. It might be time for a commercial break. Jane said that I didn't bring anything along today. Actually, that's not true. Just to show you the range of consulting capabilities at the Center for Applied Speculation. If you remember, last year there was a controversy on what should be the state slogan in Nebraska. Any of you remember what the state slogan was at that time? No. This was the official tourist slogan that they'd paid real money to develop. It was, I believe, discover the difference. They don't push it much in the state, but out in the rest areas, they have. Well, the governor got a new consultant and said, we need a new slogan. And his choice of a slogan for $60,000 was, my choice, Nebraska. Well, at the Center for Applied Speculation, we said, why don't we come up with the ultimate in state slogans? And if you start looking around, lots of people in America have been just about everywhere. They've been to both Disneyland and Disney World, you know. They've been to opposite ends. So what else can you do? They're sitting around there in January or something, and they're saying, you know, this year, gosh, let's go someplace else. So that hit a chord. So I said, why not? Bumper sticker, Nebraska is someplace else. You want to go someplace else this year? Let's go to Nebraska. And, I'm happy to say that I just happen to have a few of these left. Now, normally, these have been sold through the mail for two for a dollar, but today a special in-auditorium price to you is three for a dollar. And I would advise getting three because... Well, they hold up for a couple of months on your car, then you need to replace them. You know, we had some production problems with them, but great slogan. They say there's no choice in this governor's race, and it's a difficult position for me here today because I think I have to maintain some impartiality and some objectivity, but yet I think a lot of people who follow politics have probably already made up their choice. Maybe some of you haven't, but... been trying to figure out a way that I could remain objective and nonpartisan while still getting across who I think you should vote for. And so, looking at my own expertise as a carpenter, I said, well, if I can't tear up the candidates, why don't I take a look at their yard signs? So I have here representative random sample yard signs extracted from Lincoln Lawns just this morning. Now this is a yard sign for Hamilton South. There's a name on it. I have investigated this yard sign. I have a certain familiarity with it, and I think I can honestly say that it represents, in conventional yard signs, the state of the art. Now, a lot of you may not appreciate what goes into making a yard sign durable, but let me just point out a few features that show the experience of this candidate in selecting people to build yard signs. Now, most yard signs heretofore have been nailed or stapled, and it's a painful, noisy experience. These are the first yard signs probably in world history to be screwed together. With Phillips head screws, we've been able to automate the process a little bit and save a lot of banged fingers. That's the first thing that meets the eye on close inspection. Another thing, though, is the secret of these yard signs for durable quality that will last campaign after campaign and into the second term. These signs are glued together. They don't depend merely upon staples. They're glued. That's what really holds them together. And then there's a lath running down the center. Now, I think that really represents the finest yard sign that people can build. But I have to say, in all honesty, that I think this year, Kay Orr, the other candidate, has come up with the finest yard sign that money can buy. I was frankly sitting out just to kind of dump on her yard signs, but I went out yesterday and I did check the headquarters, and they offered me this one, and it is a revolutionary new design, folks. If you notice this, you kind of look, I can't see all the way through because you're sticking there, but it's got a cardboard stiffener on the bottom. You know, it's incredibly ingenious. And then on the top, it's got a clamp, the kind of clamp they use for clamping whole term papers together, things like that. And so, you know, it is rather revolutionary. But one thing about these signs, though, is that Kay Orr talks about, creating jobs in Nebraska once she gets elected governor, but already in her campaign she's been eliminating jobs. What about the guys that are going to pound yard signs? What about the guys who are going to put in nails? What about the guys who are going to put in glues at the Staples? They've been eliminated. So, folks, I don't know. While remaining objective and nonpartisan, you understand. But the real question is, how do they stand the test? How do they stand up? We'll see. I don't know. We have a good laboratory surface here. I don't know. Let's use the floor. First, you take it. Now, I'm not going to... I'll just switch these signs up and close my eyes. If I had a bigger budget, I'd have a band fold on it. Now I do not know which sign is which. Okay. First, we take this sign, and we're going to give it a couple good sharp raps. Okay. Now we're going to take this sharp sign, give it a good sharp rap. Folks, experience counts. I said I'd bring those signs back. I'll have to do a little work on them. Anyway, I've said that the title of today's topic is Raising False Hopes in a Responsible Manner, the Challenge of Politics in Nebraska. And if I could turn serious for a moment, just because some of you people are getting credit for this, just a little bit, that's probably the best line in the whole speech, and I blew it by putting it out in front. I should have saved it. But I think if you look at Nebraska, we are a state in retreat. We are already 45th in wage levels in the United States, and maybe heading down. Yesterday, corn hit $1 a bushel. It went and dropped below $1 a bushel over in Iowa, and the support loan price around $1.80, which most people are putting their corn into. You can't even make money on the support price. Already in Nebraska, you know, we've done our bit in hanging on to federal funds, even though we are a state, not a territory anymore. We do get 60% of our net farm income comes from the federal government price supports. And I had a good friend of mine, Don Mackey, who does independent consulting, also look up some numbers for me. And, you know, sometimes we in Lincoln tend to say, well, gosh, we seem to be getting along here. Maybe agriculture is not that important. But when you actually do look at the numbers, you find that 30% of the people in Nebraska are somehow employed in agriculture, which is about the second highest next to, I think, North Carolina or South Carolina. And probably half the manufacturing income and industry in the state is tied into agriculture. So it's going to hit Lincoln someday. I don't know when, but it's got to. It just has to. And another interesting fact I found out was that actually Nebraska never really recovered from the Depression of 1929. Our share of the national income has been declining every year since 1929. If we are in a retreat, I say let's talk frankly about it. In Europe and older countries, retreat is a necessary, if not always respectable, military activity. I should say, by the way, that in Hartley Neighborhood Association, not only do I take care of the scraping up dog dew and mowing the yard in the neighborhood park, but I also am Hartley Neighborhood Association's military historian. So that's my... where I come from on that. But if you're going to retreat, there's two different kinds of retreat. One is an orderly retreat, and the other is a rout. In an orderly planned retreat, you try to save the heavy equipment so you can fight another day. And you try to bring the women and children and the wounded along with you instead of leaving them behind. You don't shoot the wounded. And I think there's something to be said about that when you look at a state and a state budget and the people who are frankly dependent upon it. But, we look around for a model of where we ought to go and where we ought to be and what we ought to do, using three things, which is very unusual, but that should key you in that I'm talking like Bob Carey there. He always goes in threes like that. He's looked to Massachusetts for where Nebraska ought to go. Massachusetts has been doing very well. They've been getting fat off of military contracts, basically, and I think we ought to do that if we could get them. But one of the problems is it seems like there really is no place like Nebraska. However, if you notice the back page of the paper last year, Ronald Roskins, the president of UNL, was over in China, and he says there is, too, a place like Nebraska. He says, Inner Mongolia. Ronald Roskins has proposed, and I believe it's a great idea, to make Inner Mongolia our sister state. Inner Mongolia is in the boondocks of the People's Republic of China. It just sits just way up there. I mean, it doesn't even have an interstate. It is really out there. But yet, people there somehow get along. People's Republic of China, there's 250 million people now studying English, so they can get like us. And sometimes I think maybe we ought to study a little Chinese to get like them, because in a way, they're one of the poorest nations on earth, but yet they're one of the richest. So they have an annual income per person in China now of about $300 a year, which puts them right down with Haiti. Yet if you look at what does it really mean to be rich, to me, to be rich means that you're not having to spend as much as you earn, that you can save a little. And in China, an amazing number I saw the other day is that the savings rate is 30%. You know, that's unheard of. Not even the Japanese save that much. They're something like 20%. It's incredible. How do they do this? How do they make do on $200? You can't even buy a good VCR for $200. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe they don't have enough to buy over there. Maybe they don't have MasterCard yet. Maybe they're not other things. But I think it's something to look into and remember that you can have the good life on not all the money, because we're not going to get all the money. That's the way it is. If we're going to continue the good life in Nebraska, it has to be an economical life, unfortunately, where we live within our means, except for what we can get from the federal government. Keep that in mind. That's very important. Looking to the future, sometimes you get a silent fear that our future may be past, or at least the future we saw for ourselves a few years ago. It doesn't seem likely to happen, but I don't know. I have my dreams for Nebraska. They're not exciting dreams, but they're dreams, and my dream for Nebraska is to see it become the Florida of the Frost Belt. If you look at a growth industry, you try to base it on what's already here, and you know, the strength of the people. I've heard Kay Orr's ad saying that the strength of the people is the greatest thing in Nebraska. I mean, Helen Bush Ellis would say exactly the same thing. One thing about the people in Nebraska is they're not getting any younger. And that's just one of those things. We are now eighth in the nation in the population over 65. But an interesting feature about people over 65 is that by and large, they've got all the money. The real money in the country. One-third of the personal income in Nebraska is about $7 billion a year out of $20 billion. One-third of the income in Nebraska comes from transfer payments, which means Social Security, dividends, rents and interests. And I know that I'm not getting any of it. I think it's the old-timers that are getting it. So one of the things we can do and really key on is trying to get from them what money they've been able to accumulate in their entire lives before they die and will it to their children who've gone off to California. And the money goes out of the state. A tremendous growth industry right here, folks. You know, nursing homes, quiet amusement parks, perhaps miniature golf, big expansion there. Nebraska's a good place to sit it out. I really believe that. Maybe we could recruit up in North Dakota. Come south where it's warm. You know? Well, I don't see an exciting future for Nebraska, but that's not why most people come to Nebraska or why they stay here. I don't think. It's a state where we have to make our own fun, sort of just like the pioneers. And I try to do my part, try to stay awake, and it's darn hard work. But that's how it ought to be in Nebraska. And that concludes my formal remarks. If any of you have any questions, I'd be delighted to entertain them. Yes, you have a question. Ah, yes.
We've received some national notice with respect to the prospect of a woman governor and two women running for governor. Surely the Center for Applied Speculation has thought about what this means for the future.
I think what it means is that times really are tough. Fundamentally, I'm a sexist. I think that women are stronger and can do more with the dollar. And I think those are the kind of times we're in. And I think if you look in this country at who gets the tough jobs for no money, or when families split up, who gets to take care of the kids and hold down a job, and who lives in poverty, it's the women. And I think this is why Nebraska has chosen two women. Because they know they're tougher. Yes. There are students. Yeah. Oh, there's a question in the back.
Hi.
Well, I don't know. It's the kind of race where you almost sort of begin to miss John DeCamp. I think it's going to be. It really does look like the end for him this time. We'll see, but I'm sure he will. He's not done. We will see him in some new transfiguration.
What do you think's ahead for Bob Kerry?
I don't know. Yeah, I think if you ask what's ahead for Bob Kerry, you have to look at what's behind him. And I think, you know, why did he quit? I think he's a very achievement-oriented person, and he was not getting a lot of results here because Nebraska is not the fast lane. He likes to work on his own and see things and get things done. And who knows? He seems to be one of these people who can say and do anything, sort of like Ronald Reagan, and the people still like him. So I think he has, anytime he wants to come back and run for the Senate, I'm sure he will be well received by the people. Yes?
What advice would you have for the Lincoln government on the redevelopment downtown?
Well, sure. You sure hate to see them take down the entire block of viable businesses just to show that they're doing something. The most viable businesses down there are Turo's and Dirt Cheap and the whole business. Very strange. I'm a little skeptical about it, but at least Taubman has their own money. You know, that's nice. But they say that 20% of the people in Lincoln have incomes over $50,000 a year, which is amazing, and that these people just don't have enough to spend it on. This is a great problem, a reason that we need to spend $60 million is so that these people have more things to spend money on. I don't know. I think these people are probably just socking their money away, and that's what they want to do with it. So I'm not putting any of my vast personal fortune in downtown investments, quite frankly. Yes?
What are you making another run for?
Oh, thank you for asking the question. That's dear to my heart. I brought a letter along that I keep for such occasions. This is not a letter I wrote. This is a letter written to Roger Welsh about one of his attempted columns. Anyway, the letter says, "Dear Mr. Walsh, in a column you had recently, you said, quote, 'One of the most colossal political mistakes Nebraska ever made was not electing Kurt Donelson to Congress. Maybe we can make it up to him and ourselves by electing him to everything else.'" And it continues. It goes on. It's a glowing letter. "I do happen to agree with you 100% on this particular statement. Kurt Donelson probably was the best and brightest of anything Lincoln has produced or will produce in a long time. And if for a brief moment in time someone would really listen to what he says and really take him serious, he might well make one of the best governors or any other political officer this state ever had. Alas, that's not about to happen. But those of us who do listen to him and watch him from time to time can, on the other hand, get guidance from him. And I really mean that, believe it or not." And it's signed, John W. DeCamp. So, does that answer that question? It's a limited market. Yes.
What is Zrinsky going to do about the party?
Why,
you got any predictions?
Nope. Nope. But I do think, though, this year that, you know, we get a little self-centered on this great race between a Republican for two lady governor's candidates. But I think the real big money this year is going to go on the Senate race, is that I think KOR probably won't get as much money as people think. And there's not, you know, Nebraska is still sort of a sideshow. The real race, you know, the campaign this year is going to be the Senate. And if Ed Zrinsky was the 50th, if he's the swing senator, that's going to be the damnedest thing you ever saw. We'll see. Keeps things interesting, doesn't it? Yes?
Are you advising B. Ryder's opponent this year, and do you think he'll win?
This is Mr. Steve Burns, by the way, is Mr. B. Ryder's candidate. No, I always remain in the phone book to give advice. He has not felt free to call upon me, but probably the advice I would have given him is the same that the opponent candidate before me gave me. He said, "Kurt, it's a good race if you don't quit your job and don't spend any of your own money." And I think that's good advice. Although I will say that I spent $5,000 for 25% of the vote, most of which was in bread revenues. Last time around, Monica Bauer spent $50,000 for 26% of the vote. So I think my record for efficiency in dollars for votes is going to stand for a heck of a long time. You don't have to spend an arm and a leg to lose these things if you do it. If you do it right. Maybe he thought my way wasn't the right way. He's doing it his way. That's one of the great things about running. I didn't even have yard signs in my campaign. That's one of the great things about running your own campaign. You can do it your way. Well, yes?
What comments do you have about the candidate who you're collecting yard signs in your garage for?
Oh, Mr. Wesley? Oh, I want to say I have not been out picking up his yard signs. Let me make that perfectly clear. I've been storing them. Well, Don, he really wants and he really likes 80% of the vote. It's something. We were building yard signs down in the basement, and the sad truth is we got tired, and I hid the last 100 stakes because I said, "Don, this is ridiculous. We have built enough yard signs, and so if he loses, I'll be in big trouble." I think for $4,000 a year, we'd get our money out of him. So what can you say? I mean, well, he did get endorsed by Lieba the other day, so I don't know. Makes you wonder. But yes?
I'd like to comment on Van Delkenberg, Robert Van Delkenberg.
I don't know the man. No. I don't know. I wish him luck.
Yes.
I wish him luck. It's lonely when you're out there trailing the pack, I'll tell you. Yes?
You're on the LES board in Lincoln?
Yes.
You serve on the board. Tell us something about that. What you do on the board?
Well,
what concerns should be ours as citizens?
Well, things are quiet over at LES right now. LES in the 1960s and 70s was caught up in the speculative binge in the future that swept all of Nebraska and led to the overexpansion of residential lots in Lincoln, led to overexpansion of perhaps irrigated agriculture, and as a consequence, we have quite a little bit of electricity, of surplus capacity, but we are now, with the heat pump commercials and everything, starting to eat into that surplus capacity, and it looks like that rates are going to be stable at LES for the next maybe 10 years. There'll be no rate increase this year. Seems to be a pretty well-run operation, as a matter of fact. Yes?
Well, as a member of the LES board, what is your response to Minnegasco's proposal to add a surcharge of $15 for all those who use those heat pumps that you like?
I've opposed it, not surprisingly. Although Minnegasco does have a problem. I used to be a Minnegasco stockholder. I used to own enough stock before I ran for Congress to pay my gas bill with the stock dividends. That was great. You know, I figured if everybody did this, we'd have perpetual motion. So I have a certain sympathy for the LES or for the Minnegasco folks, but there's easier ways to get their money. For example, as I said before council a couple of weeks ago, they could simply do what LES does to recover their fixed costs. They could charge a little bit more in the demand season and then back off the cost for gas during the rest of the year. And for a person who uses gas year-round, there wouldn't be any difference. But for a heat pump customer, they would pay a little bit more. But I think they're going to find themselves in an administrative nightmare if they go out trying to collect this $50 a year from heat pump users. So I can feel myself getting off on one of my pet subjects, and I don't really mean to spend much time on it, but there's a lot more coal out there, folks, than there is natural gas. There are 10 years of natural gas resources left, of cheap natural gas, and the longer we can save that natural gas by whatever means, the better off everybody is. And one of those means is using electricity to do it. So I think Minnegasco is being short-sighted. Yes?
Do you have any insight into the arms race board?
Thank you. I'm glad you asked that question. I thought perhaps if I said I had it solved, I would pique some students' curiosity, perhaps. Well, I think that Iceland was a step in the right direction, but I think they should have kept on going all the way to the North Pole. And we set them up there in an igloo, and they don't get to come back until they get an agreement. And I think you'd see we'd get an agreement. There's far too many people in this country and around the world making a lifetime career out of arms control. One thing that I proposed back in 1982, which just makes as much sense then as it does now, was the mutually verifiable pension freeze between the United States and the Soviet Union. Because I think if you really look at wars and the sources of wars, they really don't start with the weaponry. They start with people's attitudes towards each other. Used to be a time when England was our enemy. Used to be a time when people were planning for a military battle with France. But even in the 1920s, I think England was seen as a potential enemy because they had ships and we had to have some enemy. But one thing about military people, the world over, if you get them together and they start talking, sooner or later they'll start talking about how long they've got to go till they retire and how much they're going to get for a pension. I mean, you know, they've got a vested stake in the continuation of this gravy train. And so one reason why the Center for Applied Speculation proposed a mutual pension freeze, it would go like this, that in the event that you guys screw up and we actually do have a nuclear war through some negligence or incompetence on your part, you can no longer count on getting the same pension benefits that you would have gotten from an intact society. So put some personal stake in it for them, right? I think you'd see a lot, they'd be a lot more careful about these submarines and everything. So that's the solution right there. Any other questions? Yes?
What's your solution to the Middle East problem?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked that question. The whole question of the Middle East will not be resolved until there is a homeland for the Palestinians. I think that's obvious to anybody. I've thought about maybe Nebraska. Nebraska's got a lot of land, but I don't think they'd be interested in moving here. Maybe we wouldn't be interested in having them here. But one place that there could be a Palestinian homeland is the West Bank of the Jordan River, which is currently occupied by the State of Israel, and which they believe was given to them by God some years ago. Says so in the Bible. But and so it would be sacrilegious for the State of Israel to give back the West Bank to these people because God gave it to Israel in the first place. But the Bible doesn't say anything about leasing it. So what we have proposed, the Center for Applied Speculation, is to maintain the flow of U.S. tax dollars into the Middle East is why not lease the West Bank from the State of Israel for a Palestinian homeland in perpetuity. And it's interesting, when you start looking at the numbers, you know, that area of the world is so tiny over there, you can't believe it. The whole West Bank is something like 1,000 square miles or 2 million acres or something like that. But I calculated that for the same amount of money that we simply give Israel in character debilitating aid every year, we could lease the West Bank for $1,000 an acre. $1,000 an acre in perpetuity, and that land is not even worth $1,000 an acre. It compares to rangeland in western Nebraska, for which we're lucky to get a school lands like $15 an acre. So I say, even God Almighty ought to be happy with $1,000 an acre. So that would seem to solve the problem. It keeps the U.S. taxpayer involved, which is the secret ingredient to the whole thing. Yes.
What do you think about the charges against the Reagan administration that they are misinforming the public on, like, Gaddafi believing?
Wouldn't surprise me. it's a dangerous step when countries think they can lie, start lying to everybody, and think it's justified. Well, there are no further questions. Oh, yeah.
Can you solve the oil crisis first?
Yeah, they're hitting all the big ones. Good. Let me get a drink of water before I do that. Well, I think if you look at the farming problem, well, you have to look at the people who are left in agriculture. And I think the only people who are now left in farming are the chronic or problem farmer. The people who farm almost regardless of how much money they're going to make. I think these people have got to recognize that they have got a problem. That you just cannot go out and plant and plant and plant, you know, and expect to make a living at it or even hang on. So what I set up was a group called Farmers Anonymous, which says, you know, there is no such thing as a cured farmer. You know, you touch a rake and you're in trouble. off the wagon. It says that it's a self-help group where you get a group of farmers together, and anytime you feel like going into town and borrowing more money than the crops can possibly pay for, you call another recovered farmer and you go drinking. And say, that takes care of that. I've got chapters all over Nebraska. Tried that out up in Madison County. Got out alive. They knew it was the truth. Well, that solves all the major problems. If there's no more questions, we have one more question.
What about South Africa?
I don't know. Maybe everybody could just change to another color. Maybe red or green or something, you know, to have a compromise. I think there's truth of the matter is I don't think you're ever going to see the black nations of Africa overrunning the Republic of South Africa. I think we're really now in what you could call the Second Boer War. And if you look at the First Boer War, the Dutch were a pretty tough bunch. And if you look at their military capability, I think there's not much doubt in serious circles that they have atom bombs. There's very little doubt that a satellite over the South Atlantic a few years ago picked up a discharge of a neutron bomb. And once a minority government has the atom bomb, the game is sort of over. It's the seeds of Armageddon. And there's an interesting consortium of secret atomic powers in this world. Apparently, Taiwan, Union of South Africa, and Israel have a consortium, and you can see why, as minority powers in a region, they have this interest, have developed atomic weapons, and you have to take that into consideration in any serious calculations of what's going to happen there. Okay.
Today, University Forum has presented Lincoln columnist and carpenter Kurt Donaldson speaking on Raising False Hopes in a Responsible Manner, The Challenge of Politics in Nebraska. This has been University Forum, a presentation of Nebraska Wesleyan University. Nebraska Wesleyan is a private undergraduate liberal arts college located in Lincoln, Nebraska. Approximately 1,300 students are enrolled in more than 40 major programs.